Trick or treat!
Get off my lawn!
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Hello, Larry!
Hands off to Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
Come on, don't tell me you haven't wanted to do that. Flip the script on those annoying little brats. Of course you have. I wonder if you did that. Now that everything has to be nice and safe. If you really threw an unexpected scare into trick-or-treaters, how long would it be until cops would arrive at your door? Is there a law in the books answering your door in a scary manner on Halloween? They'd probably get you for brandishing a weapon with the running chainsaw, right? People walk into so-called spooky houses all over L.A., but I suppose there's some implied contract there that precludes legal action. You cross the threshold, expect to be terrorized. But what if you answered the door as you just heard? Everyone is expecting smiles and nicey-nice and Snickers and Reese's Pieces, but instead they get to shit their pants. Could you be liable for damages? I'll have to ask our resident legal sensei, Attorney Nick Riccata. So here we go again with Halloween. What is the allure of this holiday? How has it morphed from what it was to the crap it is today? And how did trick-or-treating get to be so hideously pussified? The latest debasement of trick-or-treat is trunk-or-treat. And really, adults who participate in trunk-or-treat should probably get the Joe Pesci Billy Bats trunk treatment from Goodfellas. How hideous is this trunk-or-treat travesty? These fucking lawnmower parents, in the name of safety, have found yet another way to extract every morsel of mystery and fun and spontaneity from trick-or-treating. So now kids walk around a goddamn parking lot, just helping themselves to whatever candy is piled up in the back of the Honda Accord. Wow, what fun that must be. Before trunk or treat, it was mall trick-or-treating, which is still in full operation. Here's an actual post from some asshat lawnmower mommy moron on her blog.
We may have grown up cruising the streets unchaperoned, eating loosely wrapped candy on Halloween night, but we'd no sooner let our own children do that than bounce around the back of a station wagon without a car seat. And while some of us are fortunate enough to have friendly, festive neighborhoods to walk our Moanas and Elsas through, many parents prefer the safety and self-contained nature of a mall, museum, or other organized trick-or-treat event.
Fuck you!
How sad and pathetic for kids to have to stroll around a mall under that sick glare of fluorescent lights. How spooky and exciting. Lots of thrills and chills when you go from the Gap to Banana Republic to Crate and Barrel, the Pottery Barn, Forever 21, and let's make Lens Crafters the grand finale. Maybe they have some scary sunglasses. Ooh. These poor kids get to have the exact same experience on October 31 that they have every other day of their homogenized, climate-controlled, flatlined, and fucked-up lives. And when they get a little older, there are other massive corporations eager to serve their Halloween needs. Disney, Universal, and others have been doing weeks' worth of Halloween haunts and hayrides and packaged pseudo-spooky shit, all guaranteeing a safe experience for around $100. When I was a toddler, of course, Mom or Dad used to tag along. They'd wait at the curb while we'd run up to house after house. Had anyone in that house tried to snatch a kid, my old man would have killed them before they got the door shut. There was zero danger. Zero. By the time we were 6 or 7, we'd head out as a pack. 8, 9, maybe a dozen neighborhood kids. Nobody gave us any static ever. But we experienced the thrill of the unknown, of knocking on that door and not knowing what the hell would be on the other side of it. Usually, it was just some other parent who would say a few words, toss candy into the bags, and we were on to the next house. But still, you just never knew. Of course, we all hoped some actual green-faced witch or Frankenstein or Dracula would open the door and chase us down the block. Risk, uncertainty, surprise. Those things make life worth living. Wonder what's behind that door. Wonder if I can make the basketball team. Wonder if I can figure out that song on the guitar. Wonder if I can get that pointy chick's phone number. Wonder if this car will do over 100. Wonder if I can ski that Black Diamond Trail. Can I get that job? Can I start that business? And on it goes. But these fucking helicopter and now lawnmower parents have pretty much successfully rigged every endeavor in a child's life to eliminate all risk and uncertainty. And they're too fucking stupid to realize that so have they eliminated any chance of that kid feeling any sense of accomplishment and real self-esteem. Participation trophies are societal cancer. But back to Halloween. Somehow, it's been bifurcated, huh? There's the Mickey Mouse not-so-scary Halloween. And that's okay. I get that. No 4-year-old should be watching simulated dismembering. And then there's the other Halloween, the Festival of Gorn, which is a Hollywood construct, probably birthed with the release of the original Halloween in 1978. Somehow that movie married gore to October 31st. Up until then, there was kind of a lightweight supernatural edge to the holiday, right? Witches and vampires and goblins. Since then, it's been an escalating gross-out contest. I have no idea who the winner is. Horror movie aficionados could tell you. So how did All Hallows' Eve, the day before All Saints' Day, get to where it is now? The Halloween capital of the world, without question, is Hollywood. Even the names are similar. Every year since forever, they close blocks and blocks of Santa Monica Boulevard for the Halloween Parade. They have one in New York, too. I only went to see both once. I don't like crowds, but they were both bizarre. I would have to give the edge to the West Coast version. All those studio set designers and costume and prop men and so on, they know how to make it real. Maybe Gorn is partly a reaction, a pushback to the lawnmower parents. When they scream for safer experiences, kids scream for relief from their stultifying lives. And the antithesis of trunk-or-treat and fluorescent and Muzak mall walks is Gorn. And the real-life characters who facilitate that stuff are, of course, real-life psycho killers. I find psycho killers fascinating. I devoted episode 54 to Charles Manson and proved conclusively that Charlie was a better man than Senator Ted Kennedy. By far. Check it out at thatlarryshow.com. Charlie was, of course, the king of all psycho killers, despite a paltry body count and despite the fact that he was never convicted of a single murder. He had his imbecile minions carry out the murders, but Charlie captivated our imaginations as no other. So here's a question. Those who cater to Halloween must keep raising the horror bar, mustn't they? Plenty of gore freaks are bored shitless, saying, hey, I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Maybe there is an answer. How about taking a page from the Westworld book and creating the ultimate Halloween experience, just the way Disney licensed Indiana Jones and Star Wars as rides? What if you could subject yourself to the Toolbox Killer Halloween Fright? Who were the toolbox killers? They're a pair of shitbags who terrorized L.A. back in the late 70s. Had they come along at a different time, they would surely have made national headlines, because in fact, they made Manson and his crew look like Cub Scouts doing pranks. But they never achieved great fame because they failed to kill celebrities. Toolbox Killers is certainly an intriguing name, no? Makes you think of a couple of guys in yellow hard hats and coveralls, like Bob the Builders, all grown up and gone full-on psycho. Their actual names were Lawrence Bittaker and Roy Norris, and they're both still alive and rotting in prison. The shame of it is, they should be sharing cells with any number of idiot shrinks and moron parole boards that released them multiple times, allowing them to do their thing and kill 5 girls. Bittaker was dumped in an orphanage as an infant, and oh, how his adoptive parents regretted the moment they laid eyes on him. He was troubled from jump. By the time he was 18, he had an impressive creep resume. Car theft, shoplifting, hit and run. These hobbies earned him a stretch in juvie jail, and upon his release, he discovered his adoptive parents had disowned him and moved to another state. Betcha the Dahmers and the Berkowitz families wish they had disowned Jeffrey and David before they went on their killing sprees. I wonder how it went down with the Bittakers. How long in advance of Sonny Boy's release did they plan their escape? Were they sitting at the kitchen table one night and the old man says, "Hey, Ma, you know our son's getting out of jail in a month."
"He ain't our son."
"You're right about that. Let's get." So Bittaker bangs around for a bunch of years and gets locked up for all kinds of stuff. Burglary, robbery, car theft, but they keep letting him out. Finally, one day, he's in a supermarket and boosts a steak. The stock boy sees him do it and follows him out to the parking lot and, oh, silly kid, asks Bittaker if he had forgotten to pay for it. Bittaker responds by pushing a blade deep into the kid's chest, narrowly missing his heart. This time they send him to the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo. That men's colony thing sounds so quaint, doesn't it? It's got that adventure explorer ring to it. Makes a convict feel like a pilgrim or some shit. They only sentence Bittaker to 5 years for his attempted murder, and it would be at that place where Bittaker would meet fellow colonist Roy Norris. Roy was another upstanding citizen. He'd collected a number of buttons on his bad boy resume, mostly sexual assaults. He had some outlaw biker connections. Both fancied themselves tough guys. Pretty soon they were best buddies. They bonded when Bittaker taught Norris, get this, how to make jewelry. Can you imagine how that scene played out at the prison shop?
"Hey, Lawrence, what you working on there?"
"ID bracelet."
"Whose name you putting on it?"
"Yours."
Wonder how many more bits of bling they made for each other, huh? Tiaras, chokers, shoulder dusters. As they continued to craft keepsakes and baubles, they learned more about what made each other tick and soon realized they were soul psychos. All they ever really wanted out of life was to abduct, rape, torture, and kill young females. Both were released way before their sentences were up due to assurances from psychiatrists that they were no threat to society. Once they were sprung from the joint, they got to work on fulfilling their hopes and dreams. They pooled their money and bought a windowless van with a sliding door on the side, as opposed to barn doors in the back. That would make kidnapping easier. They named it the Murder Mac, after Mack Trucks. Not much similarity, but they were fucking morons. Then they began to do dry runs. They picked up more than a dozen hitchhiking girls and released them, unharmed, just so they could perfect their rap and their M.O. Then they found an old fire road way up in the San Gabriel Mountains and replaced the gate locks with their own so they could do their thing without interruption. Cops were able to pin 5 murders on them. It's suspected they may have killed as many as 19. Oh, and about that toolbox name. They used ice picks, coat hangers, vice grip pliers, hammers, and acid on their victims. They also made tape recordings of the torture sessions and would play the tapes in the van to amp them up for their next killing. Those tapes are now part of the curriculum at the FBI Academy to desensitize them to the brutality of crime. Bittaker will be up for parole next year at San Quentin. If you want to write to him, he prefers his mail addressed to Pliers Bittaker. So Spielberg has probably pocketed many, many millions from licensing Indiana Jones to Disney, same as George Lucas. But these toolbox assholes, well, they're public domain. No one would have to pay them shit. For those hardcore horror junkies who want the ultimate thrill, they might shell out how much, what, maybe a few grand, to one day be walking down Main Street and have 2 unseen goobers pull up next to you in their 1977 GMC van. They grab you and yank you inside and slide that door shut tight behind you. Then you hear the toolbox rattle. Maybe Bittaker punches the cassette player and you hear that torture tape. Next, Roy zip ties your hands and duct tapes your mouth, and they start the long drive up Angeles Crest Highway deep into the San Gabriel Mountains, headed for that exact same fire road where all those bodies were dumped. A place where no one can hear you scream. At what point do they stop the charade and say, trick or treat? When they pull out the pliers, the ice pick, wrap a coat hanger around your throat, maybe do all that stuff, and for an extra $100, you get a keepsake Polaroid picture and an MP3 of you begging for your own life. Then they finally say, trick or treat. I bet there are people out there who would pay for that. Me, I prefer a witch's cackle, hooting owl, creaky hinge, bullet bourbon on the rocks, and maybe a screening of the original Dracula or Frankenstein. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Slide by the show page at thatlarryshow.com for more on this episode and check out 136 other episodes which are archived therein. Click that Patreon button for access to many other bonus episodes and be sure to click the subscribe by email button so you never miss one. We'll see you next Tuesday, the day before Halloween. We'll probably miss you this Sunday. We're going to take a little hiatus from Sinner's Sunday, but we'll be back with that. And in the meantime, take no shit and no rides in white cargo vans with sliding doors.